I'm Emma Connors from the Lowy Institute, and today I'm speaking with Sir Lawrence Freedman, Emeritus Professor of War Studies at King's College. He spoke today at the Lowy Institute on can we learn too much of history? Firstly, welcome. Thank you for speaking with me. You spoke today of the need to empathise with China, to understand its history and how it views its history. And I'm just wondering, how would such an understanding or an empathy affect our perception of how China views the recent PCA tribunal decision in regard to the South China Sea?
Yeah, I think it's important to emphasise the word empathy rather than sympathy. Empathy means that you really do make an effort to see how the world looks from Beijing, what matters to them, what they value, what they don't value so much. It doesn't mean to say you agree with it. It just means you understand it. And I think on that basis, the response to the tribunal decision is not that surprising. Their claims are not, as far as they would be concerned, random or recent. They all have a history to them. They go back some way. And this is bolstered by this sort of general sense that China was a country that was pushed around in times past, and has now reached a position where it doesn't expect to be pushed around quite so much in the future. So it's bound up with not just the specifics of this case, but a general sense of how China was treated as an independent actor in the past. So it doesn't make its response surprising, and it demonstrates why this is going to be quite an intractable issue. I don't think it necessarily tells us how they'll respond next, because for that you've got to look at its various stakes in the international economy, presumably its desire not to have a conflict, its concern about how the US and Asian countries and Japan and Australia will respond to the ruling themselves, and in particular whether they will seek to demonstrate the importance of the open seas and so on. So I think it tells you why the Chinese think this is important, why they're unlikely to back down easily. It doesn't necessarily tell you what they're going to do next.
You also spoke of using history as an explainer, so not so much using history to guide policy choices, but to explain choices by reference to history. And I'm interested in that in the context of the US election campaign that's underway. Look at the view of, if you take the view of using history as an explainer, can we, the elites, find a relevant episode that illustrates the failure to take a figure like Trump seriously?
Well, I think, the historical episodes where figures similar to Trump, and I mean he's one of a kind in his own way, have come to the fore. I mean, excellent book written by historian Richard Hofstadter on the paranoid style in American politics will find plenty of examples of demagoguery and playing to the fears of people who don't do well out of the system. And their revenge, if you like, or their desperate desire to see their life situations turned around. I can think of figures like George Wallace or Huey Long in American politics. People, can make a point that the methods and so on bear relationship with Mussolini or Hitler, and you can say they do. But the danger with that is exactly the sort of danger of analogous reasoning, that you assume just because there are some similarities, we end up with a Nazi dictatorship, which I don't think is likely, even if Trump does succeed in being elected. But it alerts you to issues and techniques. I think there's a broader question which is not just relevant to the United States, but relevant to most European countries, certainly to the UK at the moment, which is the difficulty elites are having in quite working out what's going on amongst so the large majority of the population, but large chunks of the population, who don't see the last 25 years as having been as great for them as it may well have been for the elites. I mean, you know, if you've got money and opportunity and so on, it's just been a fantastic time in many respects. But for many people, incomes haven't risen at all. Things remain difficult. There are anxieties about future employment. There are anxieties about changing social structures around them. And I don't think we've been very good at working out how to respond to that. The tendency to sort of suggest that somehow this makes those who are anxious worse people because they, you know, appear as being anti-immigrant or racist or whatever. And they may be manifestations, but you know, you need to go beneath that to try to work out what's going on, because you know, democratic societies will keep on. We do risk them being caught by surprise at reactions, and there are there are concerns that need to be heard.
And I guess you can think of many times during history when that sort of failure to connect with the large part of the body politics has proved.
Well, I think in the past, you know, in the Industrial Revolution or post-industrial revolution, there was a class basis to politics, very clear class basis. So whether the masses ever quite fitted in with socialist ideology is another question, but they were organized through working class movements. That provided a framework and a means of addressing grievances and so on. I think what we're seeing now is a bit more inchoate and harder to pin down, and therefore can manifest itself in very many different ways. So it's different. I think at times of great social stress, economic crisis, then it was always, I mean, going back to the Depression period, so then there's always going to be a possibility of extreme responses, people just desperate. What's interesting is though, you know, times aren't easy, actually this is not a period of great economic stress. By and large, you know, life is not too bad. And that's what makes some of it a bit puzzling.
And I guess it is that puzzling nature of events that feeds into this sort of feeling that, you know, we're in the midst of some sort of great change, you know, tectonic plates are shifting. But once again, I guess that's probably not the first time.
Well, I mean, I think in the last time people really felt this was in sort of the 1989-91 period, but it was quite positive then.
Yes.
I mean, you know, by and large, it was all good. And then, you know, difficulties started to emerge with Yugoslavia and inside the former Soviet Union and so on. But by and large, it seemed quite positive. I mean, more freedom, more openness, more wealth, more technology. I mean, it was quite a positive period. I think what's going on now is a sort of a slightly jaded view of all of that, but without there being an absolutely clear type of society or economic structure that we're moving into. I think in 1991, we were aware of a great shift and we saw more or less where it had taken us to. I think it's much more complex, uncertain, and, you know, in many ways not that bad. I mean, I think that this, so there is lots of uncertainty, but for most people in most places, things aren't that difficult. There's been a reduction in international inequality by and large. Most people's lives are better, even if they don't, in terms of life expectancy and so on, even if they still feel pretty anxious. So it's I think that's what makes it difficult to pin down this feeling. Obviously, you've got the ISIS factor. I mean, I think what for ordinary people is troubling. I mean, you know, they may not spend an awful lot of time worrying about tribunal decisions on in Asian islands, but they do worry Pacific islands, but they do worry about every day some report of some crazy person
killing
ordinary innocent people, which could be them. I mean, I think that's added an enormous uncertainty, and the numbers are tiny, you know, compared with the size of, you know, the chances of being caught out this way are tiny too. But it could be us, and it, you know, it's very easy, all too easy, to feel for the people who do get caught up in these things, because it seems so arbitrary and random. I think that's given a sense of alarm in a way that you wouldn't necessarily have felt in earlier periods, because it didn't happen that way before.
Yeah, in some ways, I guess we're going back to the days when, you know, I imagine it quite frequently, periods in the past, people didn't feel they had much control of what was going to happen. Whereas for a while, we seem to have our fingers on the button.
Well, I think what, you know, looking back in the past, you know, life was pretty arbitrary and random, but it's because, you know, a disease could get a grip on you and kill you within a matter of days, and nobody knew what to do about it. So life expectancy was nowhere near as high as it is now. I think we've now reached a point where, you know, you're pretty unlucky not to live to a certain age, and even more unlucky if you're in good health and suddenly get caught up in some act of extreme violence, which was, you know, totally unpredictable, and in the place where it's not unreasonable for you to be. So I think that creates a degree of uncertainty in a way that the things that worry, you know, commentators like me may not, you know, may pass them by. I mean, they may, you know, think this is terrible, or that country shouldn't have done this, or that's an awful thing to be going on. But it doesn't impinge on them a lot of the time directly.
Yeah. The difference is now that everyone does feel impinged upon. Fascinating. Thank you very much for your time.
Okay, pleasure.
Thanks again.